Joining us now, our friend Bruce Arthur from the Toronto Star. Bruce, let's begin with Bobby Hull. And that was, and I know you wrote about him and many others did, and it was, I guess, on that day, on the day of his passing, very, very difficult to separate a transcendent hockey player from a man who was decidedly less so in his personal life.
Yeah, and I know, and there are some people who want you to do that. There's some people who want you, you write at the end of any life, not just the kind of heroes of hockey, but kind of anybody, is to sanitize their life. And I understand that. If you were speaking at a funeral, that's different than writing an obituary that tries to encapsulate the end of someone's life. When I wrote about Bobby, like the Bobby the player, you can talk for a really long time. He's an incredibly significant player in the history of the game, not just in terms of how he and Stan Mikita like curved sticks when they were first curving sticks and how that changes hockey, right? Like that creates Bobby Hull's slap shot. He once told my friend Sean Fitzgerald, it either goes top corner or it goes in the second balcony, right? And the way he jumped to the WHA, like that's the start of really big competition and money for players. That's like a huge milestone there. The way he plays in the WHA on those Jets teams, like that ushers in the Oilers of the 1980s because Glenn Sather watched how they played and said, we should play like that. Like all this stuff is incredibly significant. But Bobby was more than just the player. And Bobby as a person had a well-documented and lifelong, like there was a lot of bad stuff, a pattern of treating the people in his life really, really badly. And that's a part of who he was. And when the NHL, to me, one of the big parts here is when the NHL brings Bobby back, when Chicago brings him back as an ambassador in 2007, this is a guy with really credible and significant spousal abuse charges on the docket, who also goes on later, but who has also, by the way, praised Hitler, although that's a little bit of a, that there's a little bit of question mark there, but it he didn't deny it when first said. And when the NHL trots him out for outdoor classics, right? When he becomes more reintegrated in the game, you have to ask, why are they doing that? And what do we value out of our heroes? And that, when Bobby Hull died, all that stuff went through my mind and tried to put that in a piece.
And I think it's fair because he has passed, and this is an opportunity for all of us to look at his entire career on and off the ice because he was a public figure. One of the quotes that I read, I don't remember who, and I wish I did, was Bobby Hull had his entire life to become a better person, and he didn't. And I think that to me is an especially damning thing in that you know, the issues. I remember, I think, reading a news article in maybe 1980 about his wife and about what had happened and the charges and obviously the things that occurred there. That's a long time to be the person that you are and as far as we know, continue to be that person.
Exactly, right? Like, Bobby never got very much better, right? Like, that was kind of one of the problems of his life. And, like, even when he writes in his autobiography, that I quoted this, when he writes in his autobiography, you know, if I had to do it all again, I would have done more drinking. Which is kind of a laugh line that you can give at a country club speech, I guess, to a bunch of guys. But like what his children said was like, whenever Bobby was drinking, we knew we had to get away, right? Like, think about that lack of self-reflection. That, like, the fact that his daughter, Michelle, becomes not just an attorney, but an attorney who specializes in domestic violence because of how Bobby treated her mother, Joanne, right? Like, that's a legacy, and that's real life stuff. And when someone is as famous and as kind of front of mind as Bobby Hull, that becomes a part of the story of your life when you die. And I've always said, when someone dies, tell the truth of their life. I did the same thing for my own father when he died, right? And it was a complicated and difficult thing to a degree, but like, you tell the truth of public figures when they die because you don't get a lot of other chances to do it. And with Bobby, you're right. He didn't become a better person. He didn't really grow. He just stayed Bobby Hull.
Bruce Arthur joining us here on Low Tide and Jameson on TSN 1260. We're down to the final two, Bruce. Are these the right teams in your estimation we should be seeing at the end? It doesn't always work out that way, but we have Chiefs and Eagles in a couple of weeks, and they've taken slightly different paths. They go about their business differently, but it is you want a heavyweight bout at the end, don't you?
Yeah, like the only other team you can make an argument for is Cincinnati. Like that was such a great game and such a lousy way for it to end. One mistake by Joseph Ossoff. Like that's just, that was really kind of, that was too bad. But you got to make all the plays. And like Kansas City, we really need to appreciate what Patrick Mahomes is. Like he is extraordinary. The stuff he can do on one ankle, the way, how hard it is to beat him. Any team with Patrick Mahomes is really extraordinary. And this Kansas City team isn't just Mahomes, but I think to a great degree, like that's the strongest part of who they are. And that Cincinnati team had enough weaknesses on the offensive line that Kansas City could stay in that game and win that game. And then when you look at Philadelphia, just what a team. Like just a tremendous all field outfit. And when you look at the matchup in the Super Bowl, I basically come down to, I still think, we've talked about this a million times, football games are won on the lines. They won and lost on the offensive and defensive lines. And I think since Kansas City has a decent enough pass rush, but I think Philadelphia is probably stronger on both counts. And it's going to be whether Mahomes can be magical enough against a Philly team with a better defense and more offensive weapons at the moment that are healthy. That, to me, is going to be the matchup. And that's why, I mean, I think I'm not a gambling guy, but the line opens up at Philly 1.5. This is going to be a really interesting matchup. And I think these are probably the two best teams in football.
Because I'm an Eagles fan, and because I'm an Eagles fan, I always look at the negative first, and I look at some of the recent opponents that they've had, and they've rolled over a great number of them, but they lost to Dallas, and they lost to, I believe, New Orleans. So they've lost some games in here, and I do wonder with the quality of competition that they've had, and now they're playing Kansas City. I agree. I think Mahomes, you know, like what he showed was how brilliant he is, even though he's not 100%. And man, that's a concern. I think this is going to be a very close game, and I'm not saying the Eagles aren't going to win, but I, as an Eagles fan, I wish they'd played more quality competition leading up to the playoffs. And really San Francisco was out of the game early on because of an injury.
Yeah, and that San Francisco game was almost comical, and they were close to me playing quarterback for the 49ers. But the Eagles were also ruthless in that game, right? And you're right. Before this season, the Eagles had the easiest schedule in preseason rankings of anyone in football. And when you go through it, you're right. You don't see a lot of really high-end teams. That Dallas loss, you got to remember with Dallas, like, well, Minshew plays in that game. Like, Minshew's your starting quarterback. In New Orleans, Minshew's your starting quarterback. So you can almost write those two off. The loss to Washington earlier in the year, I mean, it'll happen. Like, you're allowed a couple of hiccups. I do just think that this Eagles team, the pass rush that they've got is really significant, right? Like, Hassan Reddick was the biggest part of this weekend. But the thing is, if you block Hassan Reddick, then you've got to deal with Fletcher Cox. You've got to deal with Josh Sweat. Like, they've got a whole pass rush, and they can get to the quarterback. And the question is going to be, can you get to Patrick Mahomes with four? Can you get to Patrick Mahomes and make it difficult for him? Mahomes, though, was the best player in this game. And that if I'm an Eagles fan, and I was an Eagles fan, we've talked about this. I grew up watching Randall Cunningham and those great defenses in that era. I loved the Eagles, and just being in sports writing has beaten fandom out of me entirely. So I gave it up. But you're right. I'd be terrified just playing Patrick Mahomes. It's so hard to beat this guy. And the fact that Joe Burrow had done it three times before Mahomes finally got him this weekend, I mean, Cincinnati's got not going away. There's no coincidence there.
Bruce, we're not many days removed from those games that produced these two teams in the final, but we're also not many days removed from that call, non-call, whatever you want to describe it as, involving LeBron. And all of the fallout from that, at least in terms of public scrutiny, at a time when, you know, it demands all sports more accurate refereeing. God, we're seeing a lot of mistakes and flagrant ones.
Well, and there was pretty bad officiating this week in the NFL too. And
one thing is,
we've talked about this before. Athletes are bigger, stronger, faster. If you ever sit courtside for an NBA game or stand on the sideline of an NFL game, if you get close to sports, even tennis, it's faster than it looks on TV. It is more visceral than it looks on TV, and it's a really hard thing. The LeBron reaction was interesting to me because I find the whole LeBron in LA thing is fascinating, and he won a bubble title there, so you can't say that going to the Lakers was a failure for LeBron James. But I feel like he's wasting the end of one of the great careers in any sport that we've ever seen. Because the Lakers organization is not good enough. That team is not good enough. And he has moved heaven and earth at age, what is he, 38 now? At heaven and earth to hold that, to keep that team afloat. And I felt like all of his frustration in that came out in that moment. I feel like LeBron, like, he's been his own worst enemy because he's partly a little bit of a general manager in that team, and he's always been that kind of guy. But he's wasting, there's no way, he's about to pass Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for the most points ever in NBA history. That is unbelievable, and he's doing it while still one of the top 10 players in the league. Kareem, at the end of his career, wasn't that. LeBron's incredible, and I feel like the frustration that he showed is partly his own fault, because LeBron went to L.A. so he could be a movie mogul, so his kids could live in L.A. for lifestyle reasons. And I think he's paying for it a little bit now.
I'm a little bit shocked. I know the Raptors are having a tough run here, and the season is getting away from them. But the rumors of Nick Nurse leaving are shocking to me, only because I just value him. I think he's a brilliant coach, and I think he sells tickets. So do you think this is real, the possibility of him leaving? And what's up with that?
I think there's an examination that's happening with the Raptors as to why this team shouldn't be this bad. It shouldn't. Like, they don't have a lot of depth. They don't have as much shooting as you'd like. They should not be this bad. And so part of it does have to be the coaching. Nick, I think, is a great coach, a real coach, but I think there's an inflexibility to him that has to be examined, and I think is being examined within the organization, where they're just figuring out how much of this year, of these guys not meshing together, how much of it is Nick and how much of it is them? Because as the trade deadline beckons, this Raptors team, I think, is going to move someone. It's possible that they stand pat and the deal isn't quite there. But I think that there's a possibility that OG Anunoby moves. There are teams that love this guy. And if he moves, it's because his value is so high that the Raptors can't say no. I think that's a possibility. I think it's possible Fred VanVleet moves. I think it's possible, but less likely that Pascal Siakam gets discussed. Like, I think this team is looking at real changes. Because you got to think about Masai Ujiri's mindset. He wants to win a championship, and he doesn't want to win it in 7 years. He wants to win it within, I'm going to go ahead and say, 3 or 4. And he thinks if they think Scottie Barnes is a definite piece, and I think they do, then you need 2 more definite pieces. And how do you go get them? And if you don't think these guys are the guys, they're going to move. So, and if you're going to make that examination, you need to ask yourself why Nick Nurse hasn't been able to coax a little better, especially defense, out of this team. I think there's a lot of stuff on the table right now for this Raptors team. Almost an infinite, not infinite, but there's such a wide array of possibilities. It's hard to narrow down what they're going to do, and that's what they're trying to do right now.
Always good. Thanks so much, Bruce.
Dave, Al, you guys are the best. See ya.